Hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Master of None podcast. I am your host, Stephen Murphy, joined by one of the regular crew this week. We have Sammy Barnacles here. No Westy, unfortunately. He has his prior commitments. You know, he's a busy, busy man. Hair shampoo ads, all the likes. He's busy. He's always filming something, that guy. Great work ethic, though. You know, you got to hand to him that way, Sam. But, Sam, you've no shampoo commercials. You're here. So thanks for that, I suppose. How are you?
Is that a slight at my hair or a dig at my hair? I have hair.
Just no, me and you have equal hair, I would say, in terms of follicles. Is that the way of putting it?
I'm widow's peaking. I'm pulling back a little bit, but I get my hair cut in such a way where your man knows that I don't like it, so he pulls it across. He's very good to me. He knows what'll help the self-esteem. So
yeah, well, that's the difference between me and you, Sam. You talk to your barber.
Yeah,
I'm silent.
I love a chat to the barber. I'd say your man.
Sam, you just love a chat. It doesn't matter what situation you're in. You just love a chat.
You're the one that gave me this beautiful platform to chat shit.
Yeah. Who'd have known I've created such a beast, an animal. Yeah, we are back. Champions Cup rugby. We should be excited, Sam. We should be happy. And we're just kind of wallowing in sadness. It seems like years ago we started the season 3-0, top of the table. We were having a laugh, literally. It's in the chant. And now we're not. Now we're just desperate for a laugh. But we'll get into that in a little bit. How was your weekend? Any crack? Any stories for us? Any news?
Huge news. So, I met the Santa Claus. Brought my daughter. He was like chatting to me about my presents growing up. I was telling him all about my favorite presents, PS2, of course. It was a magical experience for me. Now, I think I did Santa once, maybe in a shopping center years and years ago, but this was the real deal. The daughter balked a bit now. She wouldn't let go of her mom, so I had to sit on Santa's knee while they stood beside Santa. But I really enjoyed it. So it was a magical day for me anyway.
I don't think I ever went to a Santa growing up. I think we did one in like my school, and I remember I got a round-shaped present, which was clearly a football. But you know, you gotta wrap it. You gotta do something. So they tried their best, but I was under no illusion to what it was. But it's great. I still enjoyed it. But yeah, it is that time of year, Sam. It must be cool having a young daughter at this time, though. It must bring all the magic back.
Well, last year I was kind of expecting to get it really cheery and Christmassy, because I'm a big Christmas guy anyway. So I was expecting to get really cheery and Christmassy, but she wasn't quite there with the understanding of it. Whereas this year, she is full understanding. Like every day she's checking under the tree, asking where her presents are. I was trying to explain the concept of time. And yeah, maybe next year the tree doesn't go up the 1st of December, just because it's been a long few days already. Yeah. But it is great. She's singing Christmas songs and it's getting me a bit more in the mood for it and a bit more in the vibe of it. Because growing up, I was always a Christmas tunes, Christmas cheer kind of guy. And then the last couple of years, I was like, ugh. Weather's a bit miserable, adult responsibilities, blah, blah, blah. And now with the child, you're going, yeah, this is the proper Christmas experience. So I'm excited for her to really get it this year now with the Christmas morning and the presents and all that.
Yeah, I've definitely become a bit more of a Grinch now the last couple of years. I think it's just because, you know, growing up, you have traditions and they all change when, like, I'm the youngest in my family. So all my brothers and sisters now are either married, have kids, or engaged and all that. So they kind of have all their own things going on, which is understandable, obviously. But yeah, it's just not what it obviously was. But I'm sure whenever I do have a kid as well, it'll bring it all back, which is nice. But I had my Christmas work party on Friday night, so I actually didn't get to see the Connacht game, which I was in the build-up disappointed. But upon reflection, probably made a good call there. I was in the Dean, which my first time in the Dean. Anyone that listens in Galway will understand, probably know what the Dean is. I just never feel comfortable in places that are that, or at least attempting to be that fancy, you know. $6.50 for a Guinness, $10.50 for a Jameson and ginger. Like, that's not me. That's not me, Sam, you know. I like, don't get me wrong, I like a nice spot, but I'm much probably more relaxed in a pub, you know what I mean? Have you been to the Dean?
I've not been, though, but there's an Elephant Castle in it, and Elephant Castle is one of my favourite restaurants from back home in Dublin, so I should probably go, but yeah, I'm like that. I'm not really into that sort of thing at all. After gig parties, whenever I used to work in the music industry, those sort of places never really appealed to me. I didn't like them. I like a quiet pub. I like somewhere with a decent smoking area. somewhere you can sit out and be warm, or sit near a fire, or just chat to your mates, and the music's not too loud, if non-existent, to be perfectly honest, because that's the way I am now. Although I was driving my partner's cousin home from, we were in Athlone for meeting Santa, and then she needed to live back to Galway because she's in college here. So I drove her back, and I was chatting, and I was kind of trying to get, because she's in a third or second year student, and I was like, oh, what you do now? There's no clubs. There's only one club left in Galway. And when we were in Galway in college, there was 7 or 8 clubs. And she was kind of saying, oh yeah, everyone kind of just goes to like a Buskers or a Front Door or a Doll or one of those type of kind of late bars. And if you don't get in, sure, you're just at home at 12. And I was like, jeez, that's so different to my Galway experience. And I actually feel sorry for the nightlife industry in Galway. The, you know, stag parties and hen parties, I'd say it's actually a shite place to come, to be honest now, like, because it doesn't really have anything outside of the odd late bar. And I like them now that I'm the age that I am. But if you're a student or you're young or you want to go clubbing, it's a poor reflection on what should be a vibrant kind of nightlife city.
Yeah, trust me, the last place I ever want to be is a nightclub, but I've no objection with them being around. You know, I think there's always a time and place for them. So, yeah, I agree. It is weird that one of the top 4 cities in Ireland, if you want to include Belfast, whatever, has one nightclub. That's just weird. Like, it's a strange one. But again, doesn't impact me. So, anyway, we're dilly dallying. Because we don't want to talk about the rugby, but
no, let's continue dilly dallying and
skip to Leinster game.
I'll
Leinster
describe game my good. Christmas tree in detail to you right now. This tinsel of polka.
Yeah, anything but this game. Connacht 5, Bordeaux 41. 12-5 at half time seemed very doable, and to come out and concede, what is that? 29 points in the second half. Far from ideal, Sam. You were at the game, but you were watching it. I was following it along on my phone, but I've spoken to a few people who came in afterwards. They were at the game. Seeing the response online, which is never really a good barometer, because... can I just highlight this? Like, don't tweet under Connacht's post of the final result and say that that was embarrassment or... lads should be ashamed of themselves. And like, what are you talking... Like, how entitled is that, by the way? Like, do you understand how sport works? There's two teams playing. One will win, one will lose, or there'll be a draw. But it doesn't mean every time you lose a game that it's an embarrassment or a disgrace. Yeah, obviously, performance wasn't there, and we'll get into that. But just don't tweet on... Because, A, Connacht don't give a shit. They're not like, oh, team meeting on Monday. Oh, someone tweeted that we're disgraced, lads. We really need to get it together this week. They're not batting an eyelid at it. So don't waste your tweet or X, whatever the hell it's called. I noticed that this week, and it kind of pissed me off. So I just wanted to point
this week was poor, but the Instagram is actually continuously poor. It's underneath the Instagram, the comments are quite harsh and personal. I think it was Jack Cardy when he was the tackle your freelance thing a few years ago, was saying that they do see that, and you know, you're living in a city like Galway, you're involved in a niche sport. You know, you're a fan of a niche sport, and rugby is a niche sport in this and across the world. These are people that live down the road, and like, you shouldn't be doing it to anyone, but like, Lionel Messi has a couple million followers. It gets lost in the turgid bots and whatever, but there's not many bots coming at the kind of players or that sort of thing. And Ulster players, Leinster players, Munster players, whoever it is, they see this stuff and it does affect them. Writing underneath embarrassment, shouldn't play again, tagging people or naming people specifically, I think it's too far. Like yourself, I was kind of a bit just taken aback by actually how reactionary people can be. And yeah, you're frustrated and we'll vent and we will probably mention a name or two on this under the tweets at the time. Disgrace, embarrassment, shouldn't play again, those sort of things are personal. I don't think that they're reflective of the actual game.
Yeah, here's what I'll do from now on. If you think that was an embarrassment, next time you see Bundyaki in person, go up and tell him that he was embarrassment that night. Let's see if you have the balls to do that. And if you do have the balls to do that, then fair enough, you can say what you want. But you're not going to do it in person, so don't do it on Twitter.
Do you ever see that Twitter exchange? It was like some UFC fighter and someone tweeted. It was like, you were shit. And he goes, say that to my face. He goes, nah, mate, you knocked me out.
Yeah, and the first few man said, like, I think it was Cowboy, Donald Cerrone, I think it was the UFC fighter. But yeah, like, that's at least, that was taking the piss out of it a little bit. But yeah, it's like, come on, it's just ridiculous. But anyway, let's get through the game. Again, Sam, I suppose you're better off to take this. Was it a case Bordeaux were miles better than us? Was it a case Connacht didn't show up? That's one of the kind of things I've been seeing thrown around now. What was your sort of summary of this game?
Oh, Bordeaux were miles better than us. We allowed them to be miles better than us. We allowed them to play their full game. You know, French teams don't traditionally travel well, but I think you've seen this weekend set of results that actually the French teams are taking this seriously and they're going to start traveling a little bit better. And that was a strong Bordeaux team. And they did, once they managed to get the ball, once they put it to us. And I think we didn't have an answer for it. I think we were taken aback. You know, the conditions the way they are, the full team that we had, you know, the return of Bundy, the return of Mac, you know, traditionally French teams don't like coming to the sports ground. All of those, I think, added up to maybe some complacency. I don't want to say complacency because I think that might be a little bit harsh. I think that they were just taken aback after the first big break. And then Bordeaux had way more questions that kind of couldn't answer than was there. They offloaded well, they ran really hard lines, they ran at us, they took advantage of some sloppiness, they took advantage of some, you know, poor positioning, some maybe poor defense in transition. I think in set defense they were actually okay, but where they beat us, it was they beat us up first and foremost, and then they were better with the ball. So they were quick off the line defensively, they were aggressive defensively, they were strong in the forward pack. Although I actually think our scrum, albeit we were penalized once or twice, I think it held well. We got a little bit, you know, we got a couple of frees and penalties early on. And then when the two boys were changed at halftime, we got a couple of penalties again. On the whole, they were more powerful than we were, and they earned their right to play, and they took advantage of that. And not being a couple of scores ahead with the wind we had in the first half was killer. You know, going in 7 points down, it wasn't against all odds, but it was definitely going to be a tough ask playing back into that wind. Although I think the wind died down a little bit. But on the whole, I think, yeah, I don't think Connacht showed up to the best of their ability. I think the first 8 minutes we saw a game plan that looked like it was working. And then when it didn't work, the heads dropped or something happened, you know, and then Bordeaux took advantage of that and they ran the pitch once, nearly scored, and then they got through then 5 minutes later or whatever it was. So, like, to say they didn't show up, I think, is a bit harsh, because I think the game plan was there and they looked like they were executing it, and then it just didn't execute to the fullest, and we didn't get anything from that first visit to the 22 and that 8 minutes of pressure that we had. And then they earned their right to play, and they took it, and they played, and they were just much better than us on the day. And I think even if we had executed our game plan to the fullest, I still think we lost. I think it would have been a lot closer, and think there'd be a lot less negativity around the entire performance. But they were very, very good on the day, and I don't think, you know, they probably the French starting 9-10 combo for the coming Six Nations, like Penno, you know, some really big boys in the front. I think they were just a class above us on the day, and even if we had played to our fullest, if they played the way they did, I still think they narrowly beat us.
Yeah, I think this was a quick reminder of, look, we had a great start to the season, and I think some of us, we got our hopes up of how good Connacht are. I think maybe this was a quick reminder that, you know, there's levels to everything, especially we'll get to the Leinster-La Rochelle game, but Connacht are still kind of a small fish in the pond in a sense. And I think the big separator when it comes to European game is the bulk, is the physicality, is the aggression. I think that's sometimes where Connacht do come out lacking a little bit. And when a team like Bordeaux come and they have that bulk, it's very difficult to, when you get, you know, when the chips get down and like the try a straight, like what, 2 minutes in the second half? It's very difficult when you're in that situation for heads not to drop, because you know physically wise, or whatever the word is, you're gonna get, you know, it's tough to get back into the game when you're kind of been pushed around a little bit. And from what I've seen, there was a lot of tackles kind of been dropped off. Bordeaux did a great job of offloading, but that again, that comes from winning that gain line first original, you know, collision, and then the defense is kind of backtracking and lads are running on hard, and it snowballs quickly. The one complaint that I will agree with is that it got out of hand quick in that second half, and there didn't seem to be much of a, we kind of said this last year during a lot of kind of games, there didn't really seem to be that leader there to be like, okay lads, we need to save a bit of pride here, and that didn't come in either a score or stopping them from scoring. Again, it's all right to say that in theory, doing it, you know, on a wet and windy shite night, it's a lot tougher. But we'll go through the team a little bit. Obviously, Mac going off 20 minutes into the game, far from ideal. Excited to see him there starting at fullback, because I think there's so much untapped potential there with Mac at fullback. Andrew Smith started. We kind of had that discussion during the week of, I wasn't not that I wasn't overjoyed to see him starting, but I don't think he's obviously our starting best winger at the moment, but I understand that comes with some rotation. How did you rate his performance at the weekend?
I didn't think it was great. I didn't think it was bad. I think that, you know, outside of Cian Prendergast, I'm not going to say anyone was very good for us. So it's hard to put much positive spin on anything. But as performances go, I don't think he was significantly worse or better than anyone else in the pitch. So it's, you know, it wouldn't be fair to single him out. I would just say, like, I remind this, and I know, you know, we're a podcast and we've got to talk about it. And obviously there's the media and you have to hypothesize about things. But, you know, Smith is clearly rated by that coaching staff. You know, he was signed from the Sevens. He brought in. He's been pretty ever-present this season outside of the couple of games he missed after that injury away in South Africa. But he's been involved in a number of different positions. So they definitely rate him. And we've seen, you know, Portier had a slow enough start and he rose to it. We've seen what a Sevens player can do when converted for us. And we do seem to like that. And, you know, once you get your head around it and you persist with these things, they can come good. So I'm not writing him off as quickly as other people. Like, it's very, very early into a career for quite a young lad still to, you know, who's just changed back code. So I don't think he was particularly good or bad, but that's going to be pretty much what I say about everyone on this. I don't think anyone had disastrously worse games than anyone else. You know, obviously there will be focus on certain positions because that's what their key linchpin positions. But yeah, Smith, I wouldn't think anyone, given the way we played, would have played much better, to be honest.
Yes, my only question was kind of like, is this the game to give him, you know what I mean, kind of a home game where you would obviously target as a potential win, maybe compared to away at the Saracens, which is the next game, or away to whoever. Maybe that would have been more of a game to give him in when you're not as expectant, maybe. I don't know if that's the right answer.
But he's played it's not like they're rotating him in. Like, he has been picked. I know Port's been out with injury. He's been picked. He was picked at full back one of the games. He was picked on the wing. Like, he has played a lot this season. So they clearly rate him. Like, I don't think that this is like to give him the game. It's not like he came completely out of the cold from nowhere. You know, it's not like we're seeing suddenly a Tom Daly starting 12 because he hasn't played this season. You know, that this Smith has been involved in most matchday squads outside of using a sling for a week or two.
Yeah, no, that's fair. But I'm just saying with the likes of Kilgallen, the form he's in, Mack at full back could have went into a position there at the wing. I don't know. It didn't scream to me this our strongest potential wing partnership. But look, that's a conversation for a different day. Do we have to have a conversation about Niall Murray? Niall Murray doesn't seem to be getting the starts at the moment. Dara Murray, I think, started the last two games. There's no apparent injury there. I'm just wondering why. Do we have any inkling why that is? Is he just maybe not in great form? But I think we all agree Niall Murray has been one of our strongest locks the past 2 years, and we're all hoping that he can maybe get to an international standard, and he seems to be coming off the bench a lot.
Yeah, he seems to be behind Dara at the moment, and Dowling has been picked for his size a couple of times this season as well. So it does seem that he's down the pecking order. It's hard to know why, because he's been consistently very, very good for us, if not one of our best players for the last year and a half, if not two seasons. And I said when he had missed the first few games, someone else was talking to me, and I said, I think at the end of the season, on averages, you know, it's a rotational game. You've got to keep players fit and healthy, and you've got to keep people in game time. I said that I think that he is the player with the most starts in second row alongside Joyce this season. But it doesn't appear that he is for the moment. I think Dara Murray has been quite good. I like what he brings to the team. I think that, you know, he doesn't seem to take a step back, and he brings a lot of what Niall does. But I would be more reassured having Murray start. But we just don't know what's happening in training, because there seems to be, you know, you've got a whole new coaching ticket there, and there does seem to be quite significant changes to, like, at the moment, who seems to be the starters, who seems to be involved. You know, you look at Oliver, who was never present the last few years and who's been picked as captain in the game this season, and who I still consider probably one of our best players. He's not seemed to be as involved this year. They've gone for Hurley Langton. There's different players in different positions this season a bit more than we maybe would have thought. And then there's some players that seemingly out of contention, like Jared Butler's not been involved in a couple of weeks, which is very, very peculiar. But I think that all boils down to what the coaches are seeing from what they want and from what way they want their game plan executed. So, you know, Niall Murray might bring a lot, but Dara Murray might bring something else that the coaches want. And it might not be happening yet, but you can't throw it all out. Like, we saw that with Rountree last year. You can't just throw out a game plan you're trying to impose on a team or implement with a team in the first 3 months of your coaching tenure, as this current setup is. you have to keep persevering with that. And if you believe it and if the players buy into it, it'll come good. But it does look peculiar from the outside to see a bunch of these players that we think or thought were ever-presents to not be involved as heavily.
Yeah, one thing you have to tip your hat to coaching staff and Wilkins is they're not afraid to make calls like whipping off Buckley and Finlay at half time. Like that's brave. Like especially Bealum, his stature within the game. Like Jack, not even on the squad for the you know, you look at Hawkshaw, so he can cover, you know, two or three positions, so that makes sense in a logical way. But you know, he's backing himself, he's backing his coaching staff, and I'd always rather see that than leaving Finlay on just for the sake of who he is, rather than maybe what you're seeing, you know, on the pitch. And I agree, you know, I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with the Moraes situation. It's just strange to see, because it's not like we saw Niall dip in form again in games. Obviously, as you say, in practice, who knows what's happening? But look, overall, it was a bad day at the office. That's the way it is. You are going to see, you know, there's some really good teams in this Champions Cup. This is what we wanted. We want to be playing some of the best teams in Europe, and we're going to get that. And it's a good test for us going forward. And you're not going to see any positive changes from that unless we're in this competition 2-3 years in a row, 4 years in a row, and you get used to that level of competition. That's when you can, you know, take on a Bordeaux and at home or away, and fancy your chances. And that's why I still think, and we agree on this podcast, you have to prioritize league over this when it comes down to it, because that's, I think, more important. That again, you could get to a quarter final of Champions Cup and not be in it the following year, you know, and that's really does nothing for nobody. So you need to be in this competition year in, year out, and then you will see the slow progression from that. And that's unfortunately needs patience, and that's not really fun in the sports world. But with Saracens next up, Sam, away this coming Saturday, what do you think the Wilkins and co might do with the team? Will we see a similar team named, or will we see more changes?
I don't think they'll go as far as to drastically change it, because I don't think that they want to kill the, you know, if players are doing what they're asked in a system that they're still getting to grips with, you know, it's early days. We got the 3 wins in a row, which was great. But I kind of said this last year that seasons happen in chunks and they go up and down. You know, you don't go through entire seasons unless you're one or two of the teams in the league without a couple of losses, without some bad performances. But that's why leagues, they extrapolate out over time, and you end up being in the medium or the average of where you should be. So I don't think that they're going to want to punish any players that were doing what they asked and it just didn't work, or they weren't doing it like as well as they wanted. So I'd say there'll be a few small changes. You might see the return of Jack, because I don't think JJ had his best game, but I don't think he was given much of a platform to have a game. One or two wayward kicks. He missed touch on one, and then he had one that was very, I don't want to use the word lazy because it's harsh, but it was a poor kick down the middle that gave them a great attacking platform. I just don't think that's JJ's game. I think that he is actually better than that, and it just wasn't a day that he had much. And then, you know, confidence can go if you're on the back foot or if you're being bullied up front, and, you know, it's a new center outside him. So there's all those things. So Jack might come back in. I'd say you will probably see Kilgallen. I don't know, the prognosis didn't look great for Mac, so I'd say you'll probably see Porchie in there. Or if Tiernan's back fit, I haven't heard for sure. And I'd say Niall Murray, or if Dowling's back fit, would slot in beside Joyce. Personally, I'd like to see Oliver, and I'd like to see Dylan Tierney Martin. Like, Heffernan's struggling with confidence at the moment, and, you know, he looked a bit flat-footed on one or two of the moves. He was beaten on the outside, and that might not be his fault as the pillar. He might be doing what's right, and the guy outside might be doing what's wrong, but it looked quite poor. And then you have to change that picture at the lineout, because the lineout's just not functioning. And I think if your lineout is not functioning at the moment, Dylan Tierney Martin is bringing a bit more to the rest of the game. I thought against Leinster, I thought Heffernan was unbelievable on the ground. He was that counter-rooking ability. But I think what Dylan Tierney Martin is bringing the open field is more in the game plan. So I think you might see him, or I'd like to see him anyway. Other than that, I don't think you change too much. Saracens had a tough day at the office in South Africa, travel back from South Africa. And like, you look at Connacht historically, you know, we might not always get good games, but we do consistently have big shocks. You know, we've in the past been one of the worst teams in the league, but still managed to beat Leinster at home, or gone away to Toulouse and won for the first time, won in the first year of the Champions Cup. All of these things are very Connacht. So to be able to put it to Saracens next week, you know, when they are hurting after the weekend, or, you know, their form in the league isn't great, they're traveling back from South Africa. I think that is something that Connacht could be capable of doing. And if the coaching ticket has the belief of the players, I don't see why they wouldn't. And you go strong enough. And then if that goes wrong, then yeah, you reassess what you're going to do for the next two games. But I don't think there'll be wholesale changes, and I don't think they're going to send the academy lads over to ruin their confidence either.
No, I think you go over to a team that you think can win, and but obviously if that requires a few, I definitely would give Jack a chance. I'd start Portree too. Hopefully Mac isn't, you know, it's always the non-contact injuries that scare me the most. So hopefully we get a decent prognosis from him. I think Portree needs some game time. You know, obviously having the baby, he's been sidelined, rightly so. But we need him back firing all cylinders. I think a game like that would be just what he needs, just what the doctor ordered. But definitely a confidence boost needed for this team. And that doesn't necessarily mean a win, but just a good, solid performance where, you know, they give a good account to themselves. And that's more nearly important than anything else.
Yeah, and Thornbury's playing a couple of weeks in a row now for Blackrock, but he's back in training. You've seen that and available for selection. So you'd love to see him. And then Shane Bolton, I know you're going to keep, I'll keep rabbiting on about it until such time that he leaves, but I genuinely want to see him on the pitch. And if we're going with Bundy again, Ford, I don't think was horrendous at 13, but it's the first time him playing that position as a professional rugby player. He wasn't great, but there was kind of miscommunication there between them in the centre. So he did a couple of decent things. He made some tackles in the backfield. We drove him back a few times, but yeah, maybe you move him for Austin or you bring back in Farrell if he's fit and you get Bolton onto the wing. And just try and beat them as well, because you're going to have a bit of size against Sarries away. Like, they're not going to make it easy for you.
Yeah, that's it too. You need. Did you see Big Papa at the weekend?
Yeah, that's
for Cass. A man, silky hands, hair's looking good. Great
and
to see
the
him
try in the corner. He shared his offload more than he shared his try, which I was very impressed with the humbleness of it all.
Yeah, he's a humble guy, our Big Papa. But no, always great to see him doing well. Yeah, look, it's one of those where you dust yourself off, you get back up on the saddle, and we go again Saturday. No pressure, cause it is my birthday on Saturday, so I would not like to start the day off with a shitty performance and, you know, piss me off with the rest of the evening. But again, I don't know if Pete Wilkins will include that in his team talk. We'll see. I'll chat to someone afterwards and maybe get confirmation on that. We'll move on from the Connacht game. We'll start with the Leinster-La Rochelle game. Got to watch this one in full on Sunday. It was a delight. It was, for anyone who thinks that you need high scoring rugby to be entertaining, for anyone who thinks the game's gone soft, if you haven't seen this game, please watch it back, because it was one of the most physical games I've seen. That was international level of physicality. It was absolutely crazy. La Rochelle at home, stadium was hopping. The French fans are just the best. Like, the stadium was hopping. They've got chance for players. They've got chance for the team. They're constantly shouting. It was great. It was a real spectacle. And La Rochelle were at their cynical, physical best. And I say that as a compliment / insult. Skelton was just at his most annoying best. Like, he never stopped grinning the whole game at Leinster. He was constantly talking to them. There was a great cock up by one of the commentators. They were in a scrum, and Leinster obviously are complaining about something, and the biggest, thickest Aussie accent you can hear over the ref's mic saying, he's a ref, not a coach. And the co-commentator goes, Marco Antonio there, giving his information to the referee. He's like, I don't know. Or sorry, Uni Antonio. I don't know if Antonio has a big, thick Aussie accent. But look, who knows? Maybe he does. Batia, again, they play on the edge. Look, that's what makes them so good. They were reckless at times, though. I think another referee maybe could have been dishing out a lot more cards. Leinster, they were also in the referee's ear. The referee, Carly, I don't know if you'd say he had a good game or not, but players were constantly at him, looking for penalties, looking for cards, and a lot of people online were giving out that, you know, he lost control of the game, and I said on Twitter myself, I think he should have dished out cards. But, like, Sam, surely there's a responsibility, not just only in the ref to take control of the game, but for players to assist in that. Why is it only the referee's fault for a game losing control? Players are constantly talking. Players are being cynical. Players are being reckless, diving into tackles, diving into rucks. There's surely an onus on the players as well for when a game gets lost out of control. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, but your best players are going to identify very early what the ref is letting you do. And if that's being a narky prick and chatting back, they're going to do that. And if that's throwing yourself in shoulder first into a ruck, they're going to do that. And that's why your smartest players play the game on the day, and they play the ref in the way that he's reffing that game on that particular day. So I think that you want a little bit of onus because you want that respect and you want that kind of, you know, in inverted commas, rugby values and for players to understand and respect it. But they want to win and they're going to do whatever they can and they're going to bend every law as far as possible in order to get that win. So I do think that the most of the onus is on the ref. And if that is stopping the game and telling, you know, a sideline coach or whoever it is that their players need to get under control, or the captain on the pitch, whoever that's likely to be, you know, co-captains and all that, the ref needs to have a handle on it from the start, and he needs to lay down a marker of what he is going to accept, and the players will fall in line. And if they don't, you do just need to start punishing people. And if that's a yellow card or two early in order to get control over a game because players are acting out, then so be it. That's the way it is. You won't act out again. Your players, if they've any cop on, won't do it. So I think there's a little bit of onus on players, but it's on the ref. And that might be the TMO as well, to get in the ref's ear and say, that person is, that's the third time he's gone on to you about that, do that or something, whatever it is, an assistant ref saying that someone's cursing at them every time the ruck or the scrum goes down, whatever it is. I think the ref needs to have the control and the absolute control. And that might be laying down the marker early or in the tunnel, telling them what he's going to allow and, you know, do accordingly, punish if they go past that from the outset.
Yeah, I think that was the only answer, is to start dishing out cards, because it was constant. Like, James Ryan lost, you know, chatting abilities to the referee after, what, I think it was, what, 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah, I was really annoyed by that. I saw that because I didn't get to watch this game fully live. I kind of watched back, I watched the second half and I watched the first half again after. But the whole talking back to the ref thing, I don't think it's fair for any team to be able to nominate co-captains and then for a ref to be able to decide that if the player is doing something that is punishable, to just stop talking and to move over to a ref-nominated co-captain. Otherwise, Connacht could just go out with 15 fucking co-captains next week and then everyone could talk to the ref. Rugby has always been one player, one voice to the ref, or maybe a player in the forwards that's scrum specific, but it was always been, and, you know, even at our level in like J2 or J3 or whatever we play, you know, if I say something to the ref because I'm an archy prick on the pitch, our captain turns around and says, shut the fuck up, Sam. And that is just the way that rugby works. And it's always how it's supposed to work. So I don't like the idea that there was two captains and that the ref could just decide that instead of punishing Ryan for talking in his ear and saying stuff that he said he shouldn't, he's just going to go, I'm not talking to you anymore. I'm going to talk to this other nominated co-captain, because that leaves you open for a lot. Like, players, teams could come out with five co-captains if they wanted to exploit that, and if refs are going to allow that. So I think Leinster got away with that one. I don't want to see that again. You nominate your captain for the day on the pitch, and then you nominate your vice captain who takes over if that player goes off. But the ref shouldn't be allowed to just move from captain to co-captain to co-captain.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I just find it weird that he did that, you know, sorry for Leinster, and then, you know, I mean, La Rochelle were equally as much in the ref's ear. And
he didn't have a nominated co-captain. Who was he going
to? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a good point. So I don't know. La Rochelle, I don't know. I mean, like, physically, they bullied Leinster, especially that first half. They made life so difficult for Leinster, and yet they just couldn't seem to turn into points. Leinster defended well when it came down to the last 10-15 meters of their pitch. Towards the end of the game as well, La Rochelle chose to opt for the line-out when the line-out clearly wasn't working, and they turned down very kickable points. Now, I know the weather was awful, but equally the weather is awful for a line-out throw. Now, don't get me wrong, James Ryan got away with definitely a penalty in the last few minutes of the game. But again, as we always say on this podcast, you go back through every game, you'll see plenty of decisions that go against each team. But Leinster, like I tweeted, said one of the most impressive wins I've seen from them in the recent history. Obviously, they've had more important wins in terms of context, but everything was against them in that game. Like, they were getting battered and bruised. Poor Hugo Keenan, every time he went into a tackle, I felt like he was going to be murdered. And they came out on top, and they came out on top in a way that really will stick to them, because they really haven't hit full top gear yet this season at all. You know, losing Johnny, obviously he doesn't play a ton for them, but still, it's a leader around the pitch, a leader around the team. And Harry Byrne went off injured right before half time. Thought he played pretty well in that first half, especially against, you know, the pressure he was facing. But Kieran Frawley came on and nailed an absolute monster of a kick. And the camera angle behind the post doesn't really do it justice of just how far away that bloody kick was. And in those conditions, obviously he was just trying to kill it and waste the time. But to slot it and come away with a victory, look, it's a cliche thing to say, Sam, but did a win there mean much more for Leinster than a defeat would have done for La Rochelle, if that makes sense? I think Leinster needed that win a bit more.
Leinster definitely needed that win psychologically because they had gotten it to become such a thing. But I don't believe for a second that is the monkey off their back, and that if they came across La Rochelle again in any semi-final or final of this tournament, that they wouldn't go back to square one. It wouldn't just be a really hard day against La Rochelle, because there was any bounce of the ball in that game, it was so close. So it's a great result for Leinster psychologically. They know that they can beat La Rochelle, even if they're being beaten up, which it looked for a long time like they couldn't beat that team that beat them up. It looked like that was the one kryptonite in their armor, was they just couldn't beat the teams that took it to them physically. But they've managed to get that, so they will now have belief, and it'll make for really interesting viewing. But I don't think La Rochelle go away from a disbelieving that they're, you know, the entire of what they've done in the last few years in terms of beating Leinster up isn't the right game plan to go ahead. And if they go into a final, I don't think that they'll vary too far away from what they did. And they could easily, you know, that try, Larmer's try, is a fantastic, you know, pullback. It's a great move between the backs there and to get into the position they're at. But, you know, La Rochelle can cut that off, and that's no try, and then it's a different game. So it's a really big psychological boost for Leinster to get that result, and to get it away from home is even better, especially given the way the rest of the fucking province has played this weekend. But I don't think it changes much in La Rochelle's mind. I think La Rochelle still feel that they could beat Leinster on any given day, but it now allows Leinster to really kind of maybe say with a bit more conviction that they feel like they can beat La Rochelle on any given day, because they were always saying it, but I don't know if we all believed that they believed it. But now I think that they have that proof. So it's really interesting for the rest of it. And I'd be quite confident that they will come across each other again in this tournament. They look quite substantially the best teams in it. But then, you know, I thought Bordeaux were very good. There's a couple of other good performances. So it'll be an interesting competition. Leinster fans will probably believe they're doing the double after a result, and as they should. They got an away result against La Rochelle in France. Like, that's not easy to come by. So if you're going to lay down a marker for the rest of the season, that is it.
Yeah, no, 100%. And La Rochelle, definitely a bucket list away trip, I think would be incredible. But interesting to see. Like, I know La Rochelle's league form is not great. I think they're like 8 or 9, I think, at the moment in the top 14. Obviously they're back-to-back European champions, so that obviously stands for something. But it'd be interesting if they don't go on a win this year, will they start to turn against Rog a little bit? I think I'm already hearing rumours that people aren't chuffed, but I don't know, something to follow, especially with everyone's sort of the arc of O'Gara's career potentially with managing Ireland at some stage or coaching Ireland.
As a La Rochelle fan, you've got to be annoyed that he's just like petulant in the way that he is and getting so many bans. Like, You're paid to be a coach, and you're paid to be there on the day. And yeah, it doesn't make too much difference, because in the rest of Europe, they're not on the sideline anyway. They're up in the stands watching on from a window. So it wouldn't make the most significant a difference, but it would be great in that year. I think, you know, if it's all well and good being like that if they're winning, but if they don't win this year, yeah, it might end up turning. But I'd say realistically, he has enough in the bank with what he's done in the last 2 years to kind of get him through that. Interestingly, on this game though, and it's something that we've mentioned on the podcast a few times about missed tackle stats, and people using them as a way of saying how bad teams were. And I've seen a level of Connacht this week, and yeah, there was a lot of soft tackles. There definitely was, but missed tackle stats are so hard to read. And this was, Leinster had less tackle percentage success than Connacht did this weekend. You know, in a game of that type, they have missed tackles, because that is the modern game in terms of tackling. Your missed tackle stats are higher, and in isolation, they don't mean anything. So I'd like to see people stop using that as a way of saying Connacht were shit. Connacht were shit this weekend, we know that, but that's not the reason they were shit. There was other problems. The tackling was poor, but a missed tackle stat in isolation means nothing. As you can see, Leinster only had 81% tackle success in this game, which would be deemed quite poor by a lot of people, but that's just the way the defences work now, especially now that they have Nienbaar as their coach. That's, his defence is built on trying to get up quick and stop, and not necessarily making your tackle, but putting your pressure on. So I found that a really interesting stat when you're looking back over the game.
Yeah, I think it was our friend at Harpen there had a good tweet that, you know, like, winning low scoring games with defense and all that. It's like, are Leinster becoming South Africa? Which is a scary thought. Obviously, none of us want that. But yeah, that watching that game and having heard all about the Connacht game the night before, I was like, there is just again, it's just a reminder of, I don't know, it's tough. There's a lot of good teams out there.
There's a gulf in the competition. There's always going to be a gulf in the competition. Every competition is going to have four or five realistic contenders, a one or two wild cards, and then a few that are in the competition. You look at the Champions League in soccer, you look at the World Cup, you look at the European Cup, every competition has that. They have teams, and Leinster have a significantly strong, very deep squad of players and a really good pathway system set up for them that allows them to continuously create these players. And La Rochelle have a good financial backing and really good coaches and you know, a good infrastructure in place in France, and the same with like Bordeaux. So I don't think it's hard. I don't think it's any sort of big thing to say like Connacht, you know, they're a level below. But I think on their day, Connacht have proven that they can take a scalp or two. I don't think you go into this tournament thinking you're going to win it personally. And I think it would be unrealistic for a Connacht fan to think that. But I don't think that there's any reason why we can't beat Saris in a one-off game. And that one-off game is next week. So that's why I think the teams that go into it, there's about four or five of them that truly believe they can win it. There's one or two others that think if things go right for them, they can win it. And then there's other teams that are in it being like, we want to be in this tournament to bring ourselves up over a time period to that level. And that's just the nature of 8 teams per league qualifying for a tournament. You know, Bristol were 9th or 10th last year and they're in the fucking tournament. So,
yeah, I think, look, we have to realize as well, like, I'd much rather be in the situation we are now in the Champions Cup than top of the pool 2 in the Challenge Cup, you know what I mean, with Ospreys and Falcons, Benetton. No offense to these clubs, but we want to be separating ourselves from those. So that's a good point as well, but we'll move on. Ulster were also in action. It doesn't get much better here, guys, if we're looking for good performances here. We're away to Bath, and they were leading 14-8 at half time and conceded 29 points as well in the second half. They lost 37-14. The halftime score was misleading. Bath were a better team that first half. Ulster kind of stole kind of a try late tries in the first half, to go 14-8 up, and you know that's still a sign of a decent team that they could do that. But the second half, Bath just absolutely destroyed them. A disappointing performance from Ulster as well. They just kind of looked rudderless that second half. They didn't necessarily know what the plan was. Didn't know if they could. They didn't create much with ball in hand. It was just a bad day at the office as well. Performance wasn't there. Great to see a pitch covered in shite. You know, it's kind of a nice reminder of rugby at this time of year that it's kind of European rugby, especially with all the artificial pitches at the moment. But that try end or the zone was just caked, and the sidelines were just caked in mud, which is always great to see. But again, the misery kind of continues for Ulster. They're in that kind of weird no man's land zone. Like Bath are a decent team. Finn was you know kind of pulling the strings at 10. They're a solid outfit, but just similar to Connacht. We'll get with Munster later on, not to the same extent. But Sam, just another kind of bad day at the office.
Yeah, poor day for Ulster. I think it's very much looking like they're lacking in any sort of confidence. I don't think they put the fight up to it. It was a lucky bounce of a ball was it Billy Burns' try, you know, that kind of bounced and broke to him and they got that try. And like you said, it was a bit against the run of play. I thought Bath were actually, in terms of being ruthless, where it was very late before they scored the first try. I think it was nearly half an hour into the game. So it was, you know, Bath probably would have liked to have done a bit more earlier. I think they beat Ulster up front. I think Finn really pulled the strings, and I think he moved a very unconfident group of players around the pitch and kind of had them eaten out of his hand for most of that game. So, yeah, Bath are a good team, but Ulster, with full confidence and the team that they had available to them, the team that they played, I think they would have liked to have gotten more out of it. So they'll be as disappointed as Connacht fans will, and it's another couple of weeks for them of a pretty poor showings and results that are starting to reflect that. So like ourselves, they'll want to try and get a boost in the URC when it comes to the 23rd of December and that Connacht game. So it was a good performance from Bath, but I don't think, like we saw La Rochelle and Leinster there, and even Bordeaux, I don't think at the end of this campaign you'll see Bath in the conversation. I think that the quarterfinal, semi-final, yeah, but they're not going to be in the final. They're not going to win it. I don't think they're not that good, but they were good on the day and they played it, and they made it very, very difficult for Ulster to do anything. Ulster didn't look significantly better this game than they have done in the previous few weeks. So it's, you know, I think Ian Henderson was quite self-deprecating self and quite harsh about their own performances. They're going to want to pull their socks up and try and get a couple of results, because seasons can spiral, and much like that with Connacht, season can spiral off the back of a few results. So they're going to want to get the confidence back from somehow, and it maybe a win next week is the only way.
Yeah, look, just if I'm looking at an Ulster, as an Ulster fan, looking at that group, like Toulouse, Bath just bet them. Harlequins had an incredible win away to Racing. Racing, obviously they're always there, thereabouts. I mean, you look at Cardiff as an easy win. Thankfully, Cardiff had a worse score difference than us, so thank you for that, Cardiff, from Connacht fans.
Ulster don't play Cardiff. That's the thing with this result, is Ulster, you don't play the team in your own league, so you play the four others. So realistically, Ulster are fighting quite a similar thing to what Connacht have in the league, where they're Racing, Harlequins, Bath and Toulouse all play Cardiff and will all probably be expecting an easy 5 points there. But there's no easy 5 points for Ulster at all. They're Racing, Harlequins, Bath and Toulouse. And you know, the Bath game was one already, but that, there's no easy games in that at all. So it's really tough, as much as it is for Connacht. But you know, I think in our league, Bristol might be kind of looking at us as the Cardiff of our table, the way that Ulster are looking at Cardiff in theirs. And that's the downside. Well, not the downside, a downside, because there's plenty of downsides to the current format. I don't like it at all. But they Ulster have it very tough, because all of the rest of the pool teams have to play Cardiff and get that easy 5 points. The way that Connacht have it tough in the league, where we have to play two interpros, so we have to play all the Irish teams twice. It makes it very difficult just to start on that kind of back foot.
Yeah, it's just, you know, looking at that, Ulster probably won't be favourites for any of those games. The way, and like I suppose why they should, they're similar to Connacht, so they're going to have to cause some upsets as well if they want to. Again, Ulster, I feel like Ulster going to this competition obviously with different expectations to Connacht, and that's where it hurts more. I think as we kind of stay, we kind of we're in the happy to be there phase, which is not obviously what you kind of people would say is the best attitude, but it's the realistic one. Whereas Ulster, especially the last kind of 2 years, getting to the semi final as they did and being kind of heartbroken, whatever that was a year or two ago, they have some expectations and it's just not looking good this year. And again, it's another week of questions for Dan McFarlane, which I'm sure he loves and hates, and it's just another cloud hanging over the club for another week. Interesting set of kind of weird times for Ulster.
Yeah, it's funny because they seem to have Racing and Toulouse at home, so they have the two England trips and two French teams coming to them, so that kind of helps them a little bit if you want to talk about just, you know, French teams not traditionally traveling that well, but that's not been the case this week. So that it's a funny one. That I would have thought that the cup would have been done in such a way that they tried to make, you know, you go away to France and go away to England once each, but it seems that they have the two French teams at home and the two English trips.
Yeah, I suppose maybe Toulouse after their big win wouldn't travel. I don't know. It's impossible to predict. But at the way Ulster are playing at the moment, it's very hard to back them to beat many teams, you know. And that's just the way it is. But well, as I said, hopefully they'll be able to turn it around. We'll move on to the final team in action. Munster at home to Bayonne. And they drew 17 points each. But again, halftime scores kind of tells the story here. 14 points to 3 up for Munster. Connacht, Ulster and Munster all had dreadful second half performances of all the provinces, but I think the story here is we get to kind of Munster not playing very well. Bayonne were absolutely fantastic. Watching this game, they never, like, again, 14-3 down, a team like Bayonne away at Thomond Park, that's not a good position to be in, and very easy for a team to sort of be like, you know, accept, okay, we're going to lose here, especially a team like Munster, the form that they've been in, the reigning URC champions, and they never give up, and you could sense their body language was incredible. Something that I think Connacht sometimes lack is they never looked beaten. They never looked like they were down and out. Defensively wise, they were absolutely incredible, putting their bodies on the line. Again, they have a good bit of bulk about them, and they just kept going, and then, like, you know, like a typical kind of French team, they can score a try at the drop of a hat, and they were absolutely worth every penny of this draw, possibly even more. Munster had a chance, obviously, to win it with Jack Crowley, but I see Over the Hill Prop actually tweeted, I don't know how I didn't notice it, he's missing a boot, his left foot, he's in sock, so no wonder that it was, I was in our WhatsApp group, it was looking like a shank, but consider now he only had one boot on, I'm not going to slate him for that, but so, yeah, what do you think of this game, Sam? Munster, just again, don't want to take away from Bayonne because they were absolutely fantastic, but Munster would have been looking at that as a win.
They definitely would have. They rotated in such a manner that I think that they thought they had it. They were at home. They were banking on French team. You know, a French team that also had rotated. I'm not going to say that I'm an expert at all. I don't watch too much top 14. But from what I've read, it wasn't a full Bayonne team as well. It was a rotated Bayonne team. But you know, once they rotated a little bit, they still had a very strong team out. They still had a bunch of players there that you would consider starters and a few there that would want to consider themselves in the conversation for selection. So it's by no means a second team. It's not like, you know, a Leinster team that they put out against us a few weeks where there's a lot of players there that wouldn't be considered starters. It was a good enough team. They'll be disappointed with not seeing it out. They'll be disappointed in their second half. I think it was the loose head or over the hill prop. One of the Munster fans were saying that, you know, between Ulster, Munster and Connacht, was 3 points scored in the second half of the three games. And Connacht, you know, that's another game now Munster haven't done well in the second half. It's been a kind of reoccurring theme. So whatever it is about mentality wise there, that needs to be sorted out for them, because I've said in the last few weeks that I think that they're a phenomenal team. They look like they had made that step back up to be kind of in line with Leinster in terms of where they are at in the league. And I still believe that, because I still believe some of the stuff I've seen them season has been phenomenal. And they're the current league champions, so you can't write them off. But there was a few players that maybe couldn't get the foothold they liked. They did well, and then when it stopped going their way, they weren't as confident with the ball. Bayonne were full of belief, and when they got their back up, they really started playing some lovely stuff. Like, you can even see that the composure for that kind of show and go for the try in the corner was brilliant. You know, he doesn't give that early pass and risk the interception, even though your mind would be thrown, like, throw it to the winger. It's such good composure. And then to nail the conversion, yeah, it's, you know, it's one of them that he can't blame him if he misses it from where it is, but it was excellent piece of rugby. So I think you don't want to take away from Bayonne's performance, because it is a great performance, but Munster will be bitterly disappointed that they let that go. And, you know, they've only got 2 points from the game instead of the four or five that they would have wanted from this game. And it makes the rest of this cup harder for them. So that's a shame, but I wouldn't be too worried if I was a Munster fan. If it starts to happen week in, week out, then yeah, you start to question it. But I think they've been quite good this season. They played some really good stuff, and a couple of those players there, yeah, probably not first choice players.
Speaking of Munster fans, there was obviously during the game a bit of a scuffle that broke into the, you know, to the right to the sidelines. A fan grabbed the jersey of a Bayonne player and pulled him. To which the Bayonne player, in fairness to him, did turn around and did like a dummy punch, which made me chuckle at the time. But Munster actually came out with a statement today. I'm just reading it. So they have prohibited the supporter from Thomond Park. They say that the supporter got in contact with them, identified himself and apologised. And they'll be contacting Bayonne to apologise. So glad to see that's been covered up, because that was obviously disgraceful. You can't be doing that. You know, obviously players in the pitch scuffling is one thing, but, you know, player or crowd members can't get involved, fans getting involved. I'm sure there was a bit of beer involved and all that, but I'm glad that that's being sorted, because I was hoping that that wasn't going to be brushed under the rug, because that's actions that can't be done, you know.
No,
when you're that close to the pitch, it's understood, like, you know, you're close to the action. Don't be putting hands on players. Just, yeah, that's obvious.
For your own health and safety as well, like, because you put a player who's at 99 in terms of his emotional output right there. You put him in a position where he could do anything, and he is, you know, his hands will kill you, like, if he turned around and does something. So I think the stupidity, yeah, you like to see that he's come forward and he's made himself identified to the authorities and to Munster, and they've taken action and banned him. And I believe, from what I've heard online, it's a significant ban, you know, a two-year stadium ban, and rightly so, because I don't think you should be putting hands on any player in any regard like that, because you don't know what you're going to do, and you don't know what that player could do and end up getting themselves in a whole heap of trouble if they assault a fan, if they in reaction even. You know, that could ruin a career. So it's, yeah, it was a strange moment. It's the type of thing that I actually could see myself doing, just in, not in the heat of the moment, but just being stupid, because that's the type of thing that I used to do and get in trouble for when I was in school, was just stupid things where you're not thinking. So I don't think that the fan has done anything knowingly. He'll regret his decision now that he's got his ban. So it's, yeah, you don't want to see that at all.
Yeah, it doesn't say how lengthy the ban is, but that's a pretty lengthy ban. But again, you need to do that. You need to set the precedent here that don't touch players. So glad that that's been taken care of. But yeah, Munster will be looking to bounce back from that, definitely. Looking at their group with the Saints, the Chiefs, Exeter Chiefs, Northampton Saints, Toulon, no easy teams there. But obviously, I think Munster will, I think rightly so now, view themselves as potential contenders for this tournament. You know, EuroC champions, again, they seem to be only getting better and better under Roundtree. That was definitely a setback and maybe a reminder to them, but maybe a good kick up the backside that they may have needed. So interesting to see what happens there now next week. So yeah, round two this weekend, Sam. That wraps up all our round one games. Thank you to everyone who has sort of sent donations or tips to the podcast for our Christmas party, my birthday fund, pint fund, which is happening this Saturday. So we have received a few people for you, you know, kind of donations, I suppose. Is that the right word to use? I don't want to sound like we're a charity here, but if you've enjoyed the podcast over the last couple of years, it has been free, and you would like to send us, you know, a 5 or 10 or whatever it is, we do appreciate it. The link's in my bio on Twitter. Thank you to everyone who has sent some money so far. It's been very generous, and everyone we sends a message, so we really do appreciate it. But yeah, Christmas party is a Saturday, Sam. How drunk are you gonna get?
On my staff Christmas party Friday as well, so it could be a rough enough Sunday Monday combination, and then next Tuesday we have the school nativity, so hopefully I'll be back in action for that.
If God lose on Saturday, you might not make it, Sam. You might not even show up.
But this weekend, Jesus, Liverpool left it late, and then Eagles got stomped by Dallas, which is the worst. So this weekend, now it wasn't the best of weekends. Thank God Liverpool managed to pull it off, because Otherwise, it would have been a rough one. But yeah, you're the big 3-0 now this weekend.
I'm 30 on Saturday.
Next time the fans hear from you, you'd be an old man.
Yeah, I think anyone who's ever like met me or seen me always thinks I'm older than 30. So that's always pleasant that I look old as fuck. But yeah, I'm only 30. So December 1993 was when Stephen was born.
I don't know if it's that you look old as fuck. It's just you're a grouchy prick, and everyone thinks you've got old man grouch. So
I also hang around with people that are older than me, like you and Wes, you're a couple of years older than me. The lads at work are always telling me a bit about it, so maybe that's it. I was going to say it's because I'm really mature for my age, but thanks for taking that away, Sam. Appreciate that. But yeah, we'll be back next week to recap, hopefully a more positive podcast. We don't like being sad and negative, but we also have to be realistic too. But until then, Sam, I will chat to you next week.
Night-night.